This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is coming up to 6:05 in the evening with Lynn, Ayman and Kelvin. And just closing the loop on this subject of the cabinet reshuffle, which is coming not necessarily soon, but coming nonetheless. And we've been asking you for your thoughts. I will say overwhelmingly that the transport minister is coming out of this, you know, looking pretty good. Lots of people saying that the transport minister is, Anthony Loke, is performing. Other votes include saying that the health minister is doing pretty well, the youth and sports minister is doing well. This is coming through from listeners. We have not actually commented, just saying that this is what people have been saying. And we also asked earlier for, I guess, whether you are feeling a little more optimistic about the cabinet reshuffle than others, because so far it's pretty doom and gloom. I think a lot of people concerned that even if it's done, it wouldn't be done for the right reasons. Alvin says, think of it this way. In the past, can we think of any high-profile good ministers? You know, is it Kyrie? Now, at least we have a few notable ones, like Hannah Yeo. The new government is also more transparent, slightly. Yes, not all are good, and a cabinet reshuffle might be a good thing, but remember, great expectations bring great disappointments.
That's a good point. And I think Pakatan for a while was riding on this very high wave of high expectations. You know, it's one that they had set themselves up for, you know, promising ultimately extremely fresh and extremely new changes that, you know, when it comes to very practical reasons, may not be able to be implemented, right? You know, there are a lot of restrictions. But at the same time, you also see that very big juxtaposition, right? You have ministers that may be a lot more often in the spotlight where they're seen doing their job. So on conversely, you also have ministers where not doing so well, but again, they're also strangely in the spotlight.
Wisely says, after 2 years, the PM should already have an idea which minister is capable or otherwise. It should have been done earlier this year, and then they wouldn't have to suffer another blow on the recent by-election. Now, I'm not sure that that is the only reason, and I'm not sure that a cabinet reshuffle alone would have done it. I think that it's something that in certain quarters has been called for a lot, but at the same time, there are also people who want stability, who want to know that ministers will be given a chance to hold their portfolio and prove, you know, that they can do it, you know, to actually meet KPIs. So it's not that I disagree. I do think that perhaps in some cases a reshuffle would have helped, but to say that it alone might have resulted in Tanjung Piai not going the way it did, I'm not sure that that is exactly what would have happened.
Because sometimes you need time, right, to see whether the policies that you implement is working or not, and to see the results from it. So having a cabinet reshuffle perhaps earlier this year maybe wouldn't have been productive or helpful. So I guess perhaps I'm just speculating that one of the thinking behind it is to, you know, give the ministers some time to see the fruits of their labour.
Now, we are going to be continuing to talk about public servants, in a sense, in our next story. It's 6:08 and we are kicking things off this hour with a big word, with misfeasance. And the reason why it's kind of come into play is because we're discussing it in the context of public office and the actions that can now be taken by the public against this very thing. And this is after the federal court ruled that the prime minister and ministers are public officers. And that means that really they can be sued for any wrongdoing that they commit while in office.
So where this comes from is because there is this case between Tony Pua in January 2017. The Damansara MP sued the then Prime Minister Datuk Sri Najib Razak and the government for the wrongful use of public authority. This is in relation to 1MDB. But the High Court and the Court of Appeal decided last year that the PM and cabinet members are members of the administration and not public officers.
So the new ruling from the federal court corrects this decision. Federal Court Judge Dato' P. Nalini, who wrote the judgment, said that this will protect the citizens' expectation that public officials will not engage in unlawful conduct while in office. She added that there is an obvious public interest in bringing public servants guilty of outrageous conduct to book. Those who act in such a way should not be free to do so with impunity.
Yeah, and so I think this is an important clarification to make, right? Because, of course, it was already applicable previously to civil servants. So now we're looking instead at people who hold public office. And I think we've been speaking increasingly of being able to hold people who hold these offices to account, being able to hold them to some expectation that they are going to be lawful. I mean, it sounds like a low bar to clear, and yet here we are talking about it. So it is an important thing to know. Although I think for me, just imagining it, it feels so huge, right? It feels like perhaps because the power disparity between someone like me, just sort of a member of the public, an average Malaysian, as opposed to the Prime Minister, you know, it feels like a very big ask. So I think when we speak to our guest later, that's what I'm going to want to know, you know, exactly how you would go about doing that and what constitutes misfeasance. Because again, it's one of those terms, when you try and look it up, you get kind of tangled up in a web of legalese.
I think if anything, this does open up just a lot more avenues for the public to take action, right? So you've attended all the town halls, you have a complaint about something, you've gone to the town halls, you've written letters, you've spoken directly to your MP or to ministers, you've perhaps even tried speaking to government agencies, government commissions, but to no avail, right? Then perhaps, well, this issue that they're trying to work on, this policy or something that they're trying to come up with, is directly negatively impacting my life. So the only option now is to take it to court, I think, which now, with this new judgment, allows you to do.
Yeah, because before this, when you are dissatisfied with a public official, you have to wait until you can vote them out, right? And that was one of the main ways of us holding them to account.
But that's a long wait.
Yeah, that's a long wait. That's like 5 years. So by being able to take them to court, that can at least give us more power to hold them to account. But I also do wonder that, because going to court takes out a lot of resources, you know, it takes out a lot of time and a lot of money. So perhaps while it does give us power, it will need to be done in a way that, you know, we have representatives that can take us there rather than, you know, private citizen going by himself.
So we're going to be finding out more about this from Lim Wei Jet, who is the Secretary General of HAKAM. So if you are wondering really what this is all about, hopefully we'll go some way towards clarifying that after this. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:14 in the evening. You're with Lynn, Kelvin and Ayman, and we're talking today about misfeasance. And this is after we have seen a new ruling from the federal court, which basically has put out this, which has basically allowed, I think, for anybody, for your average citizen, anybody at all, to be able to sue people like the Prime Minister and cabinet ministers for any wrongdoing that they commit while in office. I don't know if you can tell, I'm treading carefully because I just don't want to get the definitions wrong, especially when we're just about to speak to somebody who can actually tell us.
It's a lot of legalese.
Pretty much, who can actually tell us what is going on. So on the line with us, Lim Wei Jet, Secretary General of HAKAM. Wei Jet, thank you so much for joining us. So first of all, could you help us understand what this judgment means?
To understand this judgment, you need to look back to 2017 and 2018. So in 2017, Mahathir, Khairuddin Abu Hassan and a few other former UMNO members, they filed a suit against Najib for the tort of misfeasance in public office. And sometime around that time also, Tony Pua had also filed a similar suit against Najib in relation to the 1MDB scandal. Now, the Court of Appeals for both of those cases held that Najib is not a public officer under the Interpretations Act and the Federal Constitution. Now, those Court of Appeal decisions were at odds with the rest of the common law, and many legal scholars felt that it was a very narrow interpretation of who a public officer is. And more importantly, Najib as a public officer seems to have immunity against any wrongdoing that he has committed in public office. And so this was seen to be antithetical to the rule of law and democracy. So what the federal court held a few days ago was to reverse those court of appeal decisions and to have to hold that the reliance on the definition of public service under the Constitution and the Interpretations Act is not tenable, because those articles are to be construed purely in the context and the purpose of the Constitution. It does not apply to the definition of a public officer under the common law of the tort of public misfeasance. So, and the federal court decision is consistent with Malaysia's position as a country which adheres to the rule of law and democratic principles, that any public officer should be held accountable and cannot act with impunity. So it is a very positive development on what the federal court has decided a few days back.
And can you explain what is misfeasance in public office and what are some examples of it?
Well, ordinarily, whenever a public officer does something unlawful or invalid, you can go to court and file a judicial review and quash that decision. The thought of misfeasance in public office goes one step further. It allows the victim, so to speak, to get monetary compensation for the grossly culpable and immoral actions of the public officer. So, for example, if a police officer fabricates evidence, you know, to support a conviction, or a public prosecutor deliberately withholds crucial evidence which would have exonerated an accused in a criminal trial, or even if a prime minister or a minister of finance has siphoned off public funds into his or her bank account and thereafter abused his position to cover that up, those instances amount to the thought of misfeasance in public office. And any person who has been directly harmed by as a result of those actions can file a suit in court.
What are factors needed for a case of misfeasance to be proven?
Okay, generally there are four elements to prove a case for misfeasance in public office. Number one, it must be committed by a public officer. Number two, that public officer had exercised a power in relation to his or her office. Number three, the public officer's exercise of power must have been invalid or unlawful. And number four, that exercise of power must be accompanied by an element of bad faith. So, for example, if that public officer knew that he or she, acting in excess of power, had an intention to harm the plaintiff, or there was malice intended to the victim, or that public officer was recklessly indifferent as to whether he has acted beyond his power, and he was also recklessly indifferent as to the likelihood that his actions would cause harm to the plaintiff. So as long as those four elements are established, then you can, you know, prove your case in court for this tort.
Okay, so maybe we can just kind of bring it down to the ground a little bit, right? Let's start from the beginning with, say, a hypothetical case of misfeasance. How would a case like that be brought forth? By who? You know, what would that process actually be like?
So, for example, if you are walking in the streets of Petaling Jaya one day and the police officer somehow detains you and says that you have been accused of, you know, stealing a motorbike. He brings you back to the detention center. He keeps you in captivity and he probably beats you up just to let off his anger or the fact that you did not cooperate. You know, he physically abused you quite badly. So if you have been released after that and you felt that you have been gravely harmed physically, emotionally because of those actions, you can file a suit in court. And the elements are established. So number one, that policeman is a public officer. Number two, that policeman had exercised his power in relation to his public office. Number three, that policeman's exercise of power was obviously invalid and lawful, because surely you cannot simply beat up a citizen in detention or captivity. And number four, you have to prove that the police officer had committed it in bad faith. So if the police officer was just beating you, you know, or not in the course of collecting evidence to prove a criminal conviction, then surely there is a misfeasance in public office. So that is an example of how a situation of misfeasance in public office could occur to an everyday Malaysian.
Why did a previous ruling decide that the Prime Minister and Cabinet Ministers are not public officers?
Well, the previous Court of Appeal decisions with respect adopted a very strict reading of the statutes. So, to put it simply, the Interpretation Acts define a public officer as a person who holds the functions of a public office, and a public office is an office of any of the public services. Now, what is a public service under the Constitution? Article 132 of the Constitution says that the public service shall not include, quote unquote, members of the administration. And members of the administration under Article 160 of the Federal Constitution includes the prime ministers and ministers, etc. So in other words, if you adopt a very strict reading, the prime minister is not a public officer. The other grounds for the Court of Appeal's decision was that the prime minister was appointed by the king under Article 43 of the Constitution. In contrast, a public officer is appointed not by the king, but by the Public Services Commission. So there is a distinction there. The Court of Appeal alleges that a prime minister is a member of the administration, which is different from any other public officer, which is a member of the public services. So that in gist was the reasoning of the Court of Appeal.
And right now, who can be charged with misfeasance? So we've spoken about police officers, cabinet ministers, as well as the prime minister. Who else might be under this list?
Well, any public officer, to be honest. So it can be your teacher in your primary school if she abuses his or her power. It could be a local authority council member. It could go all the way to the prime minister. So any public officer who is carrying out a public office, who has abused his power, can be brought to court under the thought of misfeasance of public office.
Okay, so what does this mean then for Tony Pua now?
Well, this federal court decision is premised on a striking out. So what Najib has done is that he has filed a striking out action against Tony Pua's suit to say that, you know, your suit shouldn't even commence or start with because I'm not a public officer. Now, since the federal court has already held that Najib is a public officer, then it means that it has to go back to the High Court for a trial. So Tony Pua has to prove his case that Najib did indeed abuse his public office, and those four elements have been established to succeed on a tort of misfeasance of public office. So in other words, he'll go back to trial, witnesses will be called, evidence will be adduced, and the courts and the judges will have to decide whether the elements of the tort have been established. So it's a long way to go before there's any determination on whether Najib really is liable for the tort of misfeasance in public office.
So the retired federal court judge Gopal Sriram has said that we finally come out of the dark jungle that prevented civil action against politicians who are public officers, and we've joined other Commonwealth nations in this ruling. Why did it take so long for us to do this, and what previously stood in its way?
Well, it took very long because, with due respect, there was a general reluctance by our judges in the past to adopt common law principles. And there is also a very conservative interpretation of our statute books. Instead of adopting a more progressive, prismatic approach to legal development, and especially when it comes to matters concerning abuse of power, we should be more open to developments across the globe instead of looking narrowly in what is stated in our statute books.
Have you seen cases in other nations where this thought came into play? What happened there?
Yes, most modern legal systems in the Commonwealth regime, like the UK, Canada, Australia and India, have a very mature development of the tort of misfeasance in public office. So public officers in those countries are routinely held accountable. They are sued in court. So there's a general sense of, you know, being accountable for your actions, because you may be liable monetarily for your actions. So that kind of thinking would actually allow public officers to act in accordance with their powers and to not act maliciously or recklessly in carrying out their duties. So it is a very positive development in other more mature jurisdictions, and hopefully Malaysia can follow in those footsteps.
Right. And so ultimately then, what does this judgment actually mean for, you know, the ordinary Malaysian?
Well, I couldn't have put it better than what Justice Nalini Padmanabhan, the federal court judge who wrote the judgment, and I quote, "The tort serves to protect each citizen's reasonable expectation that a public officer will not intentionally injure a member of the public through deliberate and unlawful conduct in the exercise of public functions. there is an obvious public interest in bringing public servants guilty of outrageous conduct to book. Those who act in such a way should not be free to do so with impunity, unquote. So what this means, what this judgment means is that ordinary Malaysians should feel more secure now knowing that public officers from the most lowly of workers in your local council to the highest office in the land can be brought to court for abuse of power and can be held accountable and can be forced to pay monetary compensation to the victims. But it also means that Malaysians should make good use of this legal development. We should all be vigilant, we should be ready to stand up for our rights, and we should be ready to file suits against public officers who have abused their power.
Wei Jet, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Lim Wei Jet, Secretary General of HAKAM. And, you know, on that note, I think that's a perfect question to open up to everyone, really. Like, would you be open to doing that? Would you be open to standing up for your rights in a court of law, you know, and file a suit, actually, against a public officer? Is that something that you could ever imagine yourself doing? Let us know. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep it here on The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.